Hello and welcome to the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann, a listener-supported program. This is part three of my conversation with Adam Campbell. So if you haven't listened to part one and part two, I recommend you go and listen to those first in order before dropping into this conversation. Though there was quite a bit of audio remaining from my talks with Adam, after going through and removing many of the personal pieces of the conversation, this is what I was left with, so it's much shorter than the other two, but wraps up everything we were talking about by concluding with the conversation about the Stillwater Sanctuary and what they're doing to teach permaculture through the Peace and Permaculture Center. We pick up in the middle of some pieces that he and I were talking about regarding not only the on-the-ground setup for how they're teaching and what they're teaching, but also how the work at the Stillwater Sanctuary is an embodiment of what it is that they want to see in the world through permaculture. If you enjoy, so let's get to that and bring this long series with Adam to its conclusion. I'll join you afterwards with some thoughts and updates.
Could you tell us more about how this project itself is growing and what you're doing on the ground to interact with people and what you're teaching them, how you're doing it, and those different pieces?
Thanks for the invitation. And you did bring up the fact that there is a tension in permaculture of, do you teach at your site and have students come and possibly learn what may not be relevant to their site? Or do you try and meet people where they're at and kind of teach them there? And I think my response to that is neither and both at the same time. What I've realized in facilitating permaculture design certification courses, which ours lasts for this year, it's 16 days long in a row, is people show up thinking that they want strategies for the most part. This has been my experience. People think, oh, I'm going to get better techniques or strategies for working in my garden or something. I hear this a lot. To me, first of all, of course, that's not what permaculture is about. It's about, as David Holmgren put it, a cultural revolution to be able to provide for people's needs within ecological limits. And so for that, the three most important pieces of a permaculture design course have nothing to do with the strategies. It has to do with three other things. One's the paradigm shift. The paradigm shift to realize that we are all designers and that we're all designing all the time, and that we can either choose to be unconscious designers and to kind of live into a design that isn't working for us, or we can choose to take responsibility for our own design process, learn how to do it well, and then move into it and start doing it. And that's the second piece that you can learn, which I think is really valuable, is actually like the eco-design process, which is part of the PDC, right? Is that actually, after you have a paradigm shift, to see the world in an entirely different way, to see that the world is it's a living world, it's part of a living universe, and is made up of all kinds of living systems of which we're a part that operate in totally different ways than analytical science often says that they do. If you can have an ecological design process which allows you to take responsibility for your life and what's meaningful for you and then begin to create that and manifest that on the world and respond and evaluate and to constantly change and improve and to do what you want to be doing, then it allows you to go back home and not have any particular information or piece of knowledge that you would have gained at the course that you wouldn't gain elsewhere. It gives you the ability to, so to speak, be a fisherman and catch your own fish, you know, like to be able to engage with the process yourself and learn what you need to learn. And the last thing, the third thing that the PDC really does that's really important is it creates a network of people and practitioners that gives you that support of community and accountability, that community of support and accountability, I should say. It gives you people to let you know that you are sane, and it's an insane world, and it's okay, and you're going to be meeting resistance, you know, because, you know, in a world of falsehoods, truth is inherently confrontational, as Michael Nagler put it. But that's okay. If you can find people who, like, share your reality and will support you in times when you're struggling or who have information that's different from you and they know that this apple tree works a lot better than this one, that's what people really need. So we operate our PDC in that way when we do it. And I'm not saying that we don't talk about strategies. Of course we go into the garden and talk about strategies as well. But we're not overlooking the fact of, I think, what the true importance is of that thing as we're working towards culture shift. But as you also pointed out, one of the biggest things that we're doing there is just embodying what we're talking about. And so what it looks like actually on the ground right now, it's 20 acres, and there's two different sections of the campus. One of the sections is for short-term classes from anywhere from 2 days to 6 weeks long. And so, for instance, this year we hosted a gathering on restorative circles led by Dominic Barter. We had a straw bale building workshop. We had a leadership and empowerment skills class, we're having a PDC, we're having an introduction to bow making and the bow making workshop. We had an alumni gathering from people who took PDCs in the past from us so they could come back and begin to know each other and expand our network and continue to feel held by the experience and the experiments here that we're doing. And that ridge or that area, which is the short-term spot, is very primitively developed on purpose. There's just a pavilion, which is kind of an outdoor classroom, if you will, but it's more just kind of like to get out of the rain. Our real outdoor classroom is just sitting in a natural clearing in the forest. That's where we host our classes and constantly engaging with what's around us. And the idea is that the teachers and the students, quote unquote, will be building the campus together, and that when there's a need on site, that we'll create a learning experience around it and we'll engage with it with some people who have more experience in that area and some people who have less experience, and then work to engage that together in a holistic way. So we're not just engaging the left brain with a lecture and notes and all that stuff. By the way, there's no electricity, so you'll never see a PowerPoint in any of our classes, thank God. But it's this idea of, like, there's a problem. The problem's the solution. We need something at this campus. Let's find a way to create relationships and community and a learning experience around this problem and make it a great solution. And the whole campus will be developed that way. And so the campus is the opposite of a normal university, which requires a huge endowment, massive buildings, and massive building time with a lot of glass and steel and all kinds of stuff until it can open. It just needs that upfront. It needs massive upfront capital just to open its doors, where we said, we're going to start with nothing. And what is here, what exists, is the campus. That's the university. And we're going to attract the students and the people that we need to make it happen. I mean, I just wanted to have the first PDC completely on raw land. But we talked about it, and I was like, well, I didn't say this. Somebody else did, which is probably a good idea. Like, we should at least have one structure, maybe, for rain, just in case it pours on us. And I went ahead for that. So we had a community building party here. We gathered the broader community in this area, in Northeast Missouri, to build this structure, just, again, a very simple pavilion. And then we made an outdoor kitchen out of rocket stoves and solar cookers. And then we hosted our first PDC, and that was it. That's all we had for the class. And here's the amazing thing. I never expected this to happen. But when you create, or when, maybe I'll just speak for me, when I and we created an experience where it wasn't just lip service, where you're saying, oh, we're forming a community together and we really need you to lean into the class, when in reality we actually have the entire class already laid out and we know exactly what's going to happen. And if you really do lean in, it's going to be a little uncomfortable because we really kind of don't want your feedback because we have all kind of figured out what's going to happen and people can sense that. But when we said, this is an experiment, we don't know what we're doing, we need your help to make this real, and it's very clear that that's true, people show up. People live up to the expectations you create for them and the invitations that you provide for them. And we had an incredible experience of community and people taking ownership of the space and saying, wow, this needs to happen, whatever it was. It started to rain and the pavilion started to flood a little bit. And I didn't say anything. And three of the students picked up shovels and started to create a drainage ditch around it. They had ownership of it. It was their experiment too, which is true. It is their experiment too. It's the world's experiment. And I just happened to be there helping to coordinate the experiment happen, to like give it some limits and structure. And one of the possible worst nights that we had, which was cold and rainy, we ended up building a little fire in the pavilion and sat around singing songs all night long. It was totally spontaneous. I didn't do any of it. The students took ownership of it. And it was everyone's favorite night. And this is like an authentic educational experience. I'm using education in quotes, where everyone is the authority of their own wisdom and their own experience, and they have the opportunity to bring it to the table in a way that's managed, you know, because it's very tricky. You also don't want the tyranny of structurelessness where you just show up and everyone sits around and you say, okay, what are we going to do? Because that doesn't work either, because we're so disempowered in our culture that if you do that, nobody knows how to actually, on my experience has been, step up and take ownership of the space in a way that's respectful for everyone. So we're working to find the middle ground where we empower people to take charge of their own learning experience and having structure in that experience so people feel that empowerment and know what is going to work and what isn't going to work from past experience. So when we're not hosting classes there, because sometimes we're not hosting classes there, we view that space as the Highlander Folk School model, like Miles Horton set up. Again, the idea people are experts on their own experience. They don't need somebody to tell them what they do. They just need a place to organize and come up with their own solutions. So we view that space as a place for organizing for the world. for any group that wants to come and organize and find solutions to whatever they're working on and dealing with, they can come, and it's provided to those people as a gift. That's one side of the campus, which is active and going right now and is being kind of developed as more classes come through. We have a permaculture design certification course coming up in 3 weeks. We have 25 students coming in and a cook team of four and a teaching team of about 7 or 8 people from the area coming in. And so we're going to be forming a large community for 16 days there, and we'll be continuing to build the campus. On the other side of things, we're looking at a more permanent encampment of what I imagine being starting with the core curriculum around this idea of what permaculture is these days and continuing to expand it on its what I would call its weak points and creating anywhere between a 1 to 4 year curriculum that helps people re-engage with the skills and the crafts that they're going to need for a descent economy, what I would say like a powered down economy, or to say it in a totally different way, for the hard and soft skills of right relationship, for engaging with the world and for engaging with each other, and being able to actually pick those skills up. And then graduation from this experiment is that you have identified what your vocation is to the best that you can, what your next authentic step is, and you doing that in the world. So it's not like you get a diploma and then you go into like, now I have to face the quote-unquote real world and I don't know what to do. The entire educational experience has been put in context of two things, your life and what is most alive and exciting for you, and the context of the world and what's going on in the world, what does the world need, or what can you provide to the world in a way that's valuable so that those needs can be met. And then what are some core skills that might be needed for doing that? And then what's the network of people that we already know that have access to resources, and whether that's inspiration or whether that's money, to help you get started? And then what's a place that you feel like you can get started? And then how do you actually begin? And so that you have that resource network available to you for the entire term of the project that's getting started. So we're actually putting out there all these million experience, like as Gandhi said, we need a million experiments in nonviolence. This is a generator of those. That's the hope and the idea. Again, nonviolence being another way to put it would be right relationship with the world and each other in a way that really calls out our essence and being. With, again, the understanding that my favorite quote is Harold Whitman, who said, don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive, because what the world needs is people who have come alive. And I feel like that's the great failure of our educational model, is nobody ever asked me, well, what do I have to offer? It was always about learn this information. So let's subvert that. You know, let's find out what's alive in you. How do you refine that in a way that's valuable to the world? And then how do you move in the world in a way that is responsible and engaging to everyone that you're going to meet and to all the living forces that are going to be upon you?
Thank you, Adam, for all of this conversation, because what I'm surprising is how similar the paths that we're on are, even though we're engaging our own lives in different ways. But again, when I say that, it's on the high order as we talk about permaculture and the way these different pieces tie together, that when it comes to the macro level, well, we are, from my perspective through this conversation, I feel that permaculture provides the large-scale connection through which this conversation we're having is developing, that's provided that, well, for both of us, a paradigm shift to look at the world in a particular way through the different lenses that it took for us to get here, yet at the same time, many of the places that we've come to, those strategies and techniques, if you will, those moments of our lives are very similar. And the description that you just gave of a 1 to 4 year curriculum, as I say, it's funny to me, one of my idioms, because what you described is what I'm currently walking through with some students in a 1 year long PDC. I've called it my PDC Plus because the idea is that you can get this information anywhere. You can get some books and read about it, but let's structure this in a way that it develops in a cohesive manner and then provide myself, I don't really feel like a teacher, but like a mentor, where we can have conversations and answer questions, because I have a lot of people who I've networked with in the community. I know a lot of resources that are available so that I can just share all of that with people who are interested in gaining this knowledge. And a big part of that mentoring for me is so that after a year, when they're done, if they haven't put all the pieces together, they at least have a roadmap so they can go, I've completed a PDC and I know what I'm going to do with it.
Right. Yeah. You know, what cracks me up about the designer's manual is the ethics, you know, come out pretty quick. I believe on page 2, the ethics are stated, right? Care for the earth, care for people, set limits, share the abundance. The book goes on for about 600 pages, and probably 85 to 90% of that is care for the earth. And our current educational model in the world is lacking on both of those ethics, but the designer's manual is really only focusing on one of them. So there's this huge gap, which some people are starting to fill, and we're taking that on too, of like, where's the heart of permaculture? Where's the social structures of it? How do we engage with people in a way that is as relevant and exciting and as well documented and as creative as the designer's manual is for strategies on the land? You know, we need that too, and it's absent right now. And so we have a core curriculum that we're starting to develop, you know, and it's right now we've got 6 of them. It's permaculture and like radical responsibility permaculture, you know, not like let's just make a garden in the backyard and everything that entails. And then we have integral nonviolence from a Gandhian perspective, and that's 3 tiers, which is first you transform yourself into whatever that means to become like the highest vision of yourself. And you do that all the time. Tier 2 is the constructive program. This is from Gandhi's language, where you're actively creating the world that you want to see and manifesting it onto the land in your relationships with each other and embodying it yourself. And he said that was 100 times dearer to him than activism in the world. And he said 90% of our time should be spent on that. And then his 3rd tier, which you do whenever necessary, is activism and engagement with structures of violence in the world. And you work to transform that with love. So all of this is within kind of this framework of integral nonviolence, where we're transforming ourselves and creating and embodying the world that we want to see. And only when that world comes up against the structures of violence do we work to engage and transform those with love. That's the 2nd piece of the core curriculum, permaculture, integral nonviolence, conflict transformation, all that we've been talking about so far. How do we like authentically engage with our own emotions in a way that's responsible and do that with empathy with somebody else, and then find the information that's embedded there to move forward in a way that has deeper intimacy. 4 is manifesting our wildest dreams. Again, finding what our vocation is and stepping forth with courage and being able to flex our courage muscle and to take the next right step. And to be able to do it knowing that we'll probably meet resistance along the way, and that we have the skills to find a creative 3rd way so we can bring our important relationships along with us. The 5th one is appropriate technology and being able to have a real clear assessment of the effects of technology in our lives and the unintended consequences of incorporating technologies in your life that weren't created in your area or within the milieu of your life, and knowing how to extract yourself from that if you need to. And then the last one is gift economy and the economics of love. I forgot to say that this entire experiment, all of the university and all of our classes are based on the gift economy. So no one's ever turned away from lack of funds, nor do we expect that. We just expect to have an exchange based on relationship. And the problem that I see that most people have when they're coming from a capitalist economy is that when they see something called the gift economy, they think that we're not charging any money, which means the price tag is 0. And since they equate price and value, they often think that it must not be worth very much, or that it's free and I can just take without giving back. But that violates the only law in the designer's manual. The only law. It's not an ethic. It's not a prime directive. It's not a principle. It's not a strategy. There's one law in the designer's manual, and that's a law of return. Whatever we take, we have to give back. It doesn't mean we have to give back the same thing, but we have to give back in a way that honors what was received. And that's what we say in the gift economy. Lewis Hyde called the gifts something that comes to you unbidden, transforms you, and then leaves. And that process of transformation is what we call gratitude. And so for the gift economy to work, we have to be able to feel. Not only to feel the grieving, like I spoke to you earlier about, but we also have to be able to feel and let in all of the gift that has been given to you if you come to take our permaculture design certification course, because months of preparation have gone into it. Many people are coming to cook for 2 weeks just to be a part of the experiment and the experience of it all. People are coming to give their time. And this is all out of love because we feel like it's priceless, literally priceless, just like you wouldn't charge your mom for a wonderful conversation or playing in the park with your kids. These things are priceless, so why would we attach a price to them? They're unquantifiable. And there's incredible value in them. And it's up to you in receiving them to assess what that value is and then to understand how to move it forth into the world again. And that might mean, you know, going back to where you came from and like providing service and teaching to all the people that you see there. And then we just trust that we'll hear about that, or they'll come back to us in some way, and part of the grand circle of gift giving, because it always comes back in some way. It's just oftentimes we don't recognize the form in which it's returned to us. So all of this is around the gift economy, and so far, it's functioning great.
Adam, thank you for all this time that you've spent with me today to lead me through all this. It's been an incredible conversation, and as I mentioned to Ethan at the end of my conversation with him, this is one of those times where I feel like I've known you for a lot longer, perhaps, than I might have in this time, compared to some friends who I've had for years who I don't know. I don't know as much about who they are as a person in the hundreds of hours that we've spent together as in this almost 3.5 hours now that you and I have been talking. And I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, again, what a gift we've been able to give each other just by sitting down and just letting the conversation and openness and vulnerability go where it needs to go, and to take us on a path that we never would have expected.
Well, as I said when we started, I was expecting, we'll talk about 45 minutes and, you know, we can bring it to a close. And then when you said that your day was open and you didn't have any pressure for when the conversation would end, I looked at my day and I said, well, I have until I have to pick up my kids, because otherwise their school will call me to get, short of my one cat picking up the other one and using it as a chainsaw to cut through my door to have me go feed them, my day was fairly open. So through all of this, Adam, and I know we've touched on a lot of stuff in this conversation, is there anything else that you'd like to add for the listeners before we draw this to a close?
Oh, gosh. Wow, what an opportunity. Yeah. Could I recite one of my favorite poems to you?
This entire interview, it's one of the reasons why I don't play 20 questions or set out with a deep outline. It's just an idea of, hey, can we maybe talk about this and then let it go? So, yeah, sure.
I'm still healing from my wounds from industrial society. I think I need to ask permission to do something that's alive in my heart. Oh, gosh. Well, here, Scott, I would love to end by reciting one of my favorite poems to you and letting somebody else, a little bit more eloquent than I, speak. This is from one of my all-time favorite poets, Mary Oliver. And this poem is called The Journey, which in some ways I feel like sums up all that we've been talking about. And I want to dedicate it to the people who are kind of on that line of feeling the fear, frustration, confusion, and sometimes even desperation of knowing that there's something alive in their heart, not knowing if there's another way or if there's truth in what's being said in there, and not knowing how to move forward, because we've all been there. And I'd like you to know that there is something on the other side. So this poem is called The Journey. One day, you finally knew what you had to do and began, though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble and you felt the old tug at your ankles. Mend my life, each voice cried, but you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do, though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible. It was already late enough on a wild night, and the road full of fallen branches and stones, but little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save.
That's a perfect place for us to end, Mr. Campbell. Thank you again so much for all this time and sharing your story and so many of the things that you and everyone else there is doing to bring permaculture manifest into the world.
Thank you so much, Scott. And the one thought from Bill Mollison that comes to mind is we already know everything we need to know. All we have to do is act and to put it into the ground. So I'm inspired by you and your action, what you're doing in the world, the conversations that you're having, and what you're doing, where you're living. And thank you for the conversation and, yeah, for our nascent friendship here.
And I'm sure we'll follow this up again, either with another phone call in the future or in person. So thank you, and I look forward to those future times.
I do too, especially if it's in person. I hope that's the case.
And that was Adam Campbell. The poem that Adam closed with is, for me, a good reflection of what it means to stand up and find your calling and to pursue it as best you can. That road isn't easy, but you can get there. There are lots of people in the world who, once you find them, will help you on your road. Adam and Ethan are just a few of those, and you'll find their contact information in the show notes for this episode. I'm also here to assist you in whatever way I can on the road that you're on. Feel free to send me an email, show@thepermaculturepodcast.com, or give me a phone call, 717-827-6266, if there's any way that I can be a guide for you on your path. And also have moved the production schedule, as you may have noted when this episode came out, as well as what was referenced in the episode from Monday, March 31st, that I'm going to a Monday, Wednesday, Friday release schedule. And that's going to wrap everything up for today. If you'd like to join in the conversation, go to facebook.com/thepermaculturepodcast. You'll find a wide variety of posts and comments there. You can also leave a comment in the show notes for me, or follow the show on Twitter where I am @permaculturecst. Until the next time, take care of the earth, yourself, and each other.